Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight, or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're coming to you live from east of the Appalachian Mountains. AccuWindow forecast is about 57 degrees outside. Dark, of course, although daylight savings time should be kicking in for most of us. Those of you that stayed up till 2 o'clock in the morning and changed your clocks, you should be with us right now. This morning, the Solar and Heliospheric Observatory recorded a HALO coronal mass ejection emergency. Skywatcher should be alert for auroras, and NASA solar physicist David Hathaway reports that the top of the sun's great conveyor belt has been running at record high speeds for the last 5 years. Quote, I believe this could explain the unusually deep solar minimum we've been experiencing, close quote, says Hathaway. The high speed of the conveyor belt challenges existing models of the solar cycle, and it has forced us back to the drawing board for new ideas. It's a little like measuring the speed of a river on Earth by clocking the leaves and twigs floating downstream, Hathaway says. The speed up was surprising on two levels. First, it coincided with the deepest solar minimum in nearly 100 years, contradicting models that say a fast-moving belt should boost sunspot production. The basic idea is that the belt sweeps up magnetic fields from the sun's surface and drags them down to the sun's inner dynamo. There, the fields are amplified to form the underpinnings of new sunspots. A fast-moving belt should accelerate the process. So, where have all the sunspots been? The solar minimum of 2008-2009 was unusually deep, and now the sun appears to be on the verge of a weak solar cycle. Very interesting. The fields are amplified to form the underpinnings of new sunspots. That's peculiar. Instead of boosting sunspots, Hathaway believes that a fast-moving conveyor belt can instead suppress them by counteracting magnetic diffusion at the sun's equator. It's kind of interesting that they've been watching the sun so closely with very advanced instrumentation, and yet they're still making up new theories. What researchers really need is a good look deep inside the sun. NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory, launched in February 2010, will provide that when its instruments come online later this year. SDO is able to map the sun's interior using a technique called helioseismology. SOHO can do the same thing, but not well enough to trace the great conveyor belt all the way around. SDO's advanced sensors might reveal the complete circuit. And then, it could be the missing piece. We need to forecast the whole solar cycle. Very interesting. Maybe when they get this new instrument online, we'll be able to tell a little bit more about our sun, and hopefully they don't discover that the age of the sun is quite a bit different than what they now believe. Very interesting. There were 20 earthquakes in the last 24 hours, with four of them over 5.0 and one of them over 6.0. The Earth is relatively quiet today. I want you to Pay close attention to the news this week. A lot of things are going to be happening in terms of energy research, in terms of energy projects being able to come to the forefront and reaching the consumer. I think some marvelous changes are about to take place. You know, many of us have wondered about the creation of the earth. Some of us were taught the story from the Bible. In fact, every religious tradition has a creation story. The Hopi Indians, you just about name it. Somebody is going to teach a creation story or a version thereof. Scientists like to hold facts in their hands, so perhaps drawing away from the traditions and looking into space or deep into the ground, they search for the truth. And that's exactly what we're going to do in 40 seconds when we come back with our guest tonight, well known by his friends as Rabbi Yossi Sebryansky. We'll be back in 40 seconds. Don't go away. When scientists seek deep into space or deep within the earth, they find truth. But when the truth we see at the small end of our telescopes does not match the words we have been taught in our religious classes, a grand division occurs in our society. We seem to be standing across an abyss, judging one another. Well, the abyss may be one of our own making, and it might not be all our fault. As it turns out, there's a strong possibility that the observations of the prophets of the past, or the future, may have been very close to the scientific observations being made today. The error may have occurred in the translation and interpretation of the oldest languages on earth as they were passed forward through time to we modern humans. If we could just find someone who could read the ancient texts the way they were written, perhaps we could bridge the abyss once and for all. Joining us tonight is one of the world's most scholarly resources on the source language for most of the religious traditions on earth today. Please welcome with me Rabbi Yossi. Welcome to the program, my friend.
Thank you.
Rabbi, we love yes. to discuss the mysteries of the universe and of the earth on this program. We look out into space and we see an amazing display of order and chaos in very slow motion. It doesn't look like anything happens in a day or even a year from our perspective. Millions of us have done the comparison between what we read in our oldest records of creation and what we see in space and came up wanting. We need an expert. And when I was introduced to your writings by our friend Christina, I was overjoyed to see that you had made some incredible discoveries that may offer us hope after all. Can we start with the creation story in the Torah, or more specifically, the book of Genesis?
Absolutely. The book of Genesis, as it's called, has been translated in a way that actually separates people from connecting with the words. And as I've learned, that if you want to hide something, the best place to hide it is in plain sight. And the same thing is with this mystery and these words. The words are there, everyone explains them, and everyone goes over what everyone else says, and all the scholars, but very few actually go into the real root, grammar, and spiritual energy of each word. a little bit of that tonight.
That sounds interesting.
With the first word, just to give you an example. The first word is translated as in the beginning, Bereshit, in the beginning, which gives you a timeline. It gives you a concept of whatever you want to imagine in the beginning is. But actually, that is not what the word says. The word Bereshit, or Bereshit, the root word in Hebrew, you have two or three letters that are the root word. The root word here is head. And in ancient texts, ancient Jewish texts, they translate this with head as meaning with wisdom. So if you read the Hebrew, it says with head is created, or with wisdom is created. That's very different than saying in the beginning. What it means is that something is there and using its head and using wisdom to create, which is not in the beginning the way people see it. It also means that everything that is created with wisdom in it, wisdom of the Creator. So the first word should be translated with wisdom. The second word that is bara is translated as created. The word created is not what the word actually means. The word bara means the clear space that is made when a hole is made. For example, if you're sewing and you put a needle through the material and the needle comes out the other side, that hole where the needle is coming out would be bara. It's coming forth. If you cut a forest, you make a clearing, that would be bara. Birth. It's the same as birthing. Something, it's what's coming out. So you don't see what's behind it. All you see what's coming forth from it. So the word I translate bara as brought forth, or coming forth, with wisdom is brought forth. Elohim, which is translated as God, is another problem, because in Hebrew you don't really have the word God. The word God in Hebrew doesn't exist. In Hebrew there are many different names. Each name is just a different power in creation, a different force. The word El, which Gabriel, Michael, all these El's, the word El in Hebrew means power. And so there are all these different powers, and each power is given a name. And here, the word Elohim means a power of boundaries. So you begin with wisdom is brought forth a power of boundaries. Then the word Ace with Hashemayim, the word heaven. Heaven is kind of doesn't mean anything to us. The word Shamayim in Hebrew is two words, fire and water together. So this is a space where fire and water, two opposite pools, coexist as one. So I translate as a balance of opposite movements. Veis Haaretz and the earth. In Hebrew, there are many different words for earth. If you want to say the actual ground itself, you would say Adama. There's Tevel, there are other words. The word Haaretz here has the word Rots in it, to run. To run to the oneness. Aleph is one and Rots is to run. So it would be the desire of running to the Creator, to the oneness. So essentially the way I translate the first sentence would be, with wisdom is brought forth a power of boundaries, with the balance of opposite movement, and with the desire to do the Creator's will.
Wow. So when we're looking at the book of Genesis, and we're looking at it in English, let's just say the King James Version, which is the version most Westerners are familiar with, and it says, you know, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God. And then it says that, and the Spirit of God moved across the face of the deep.
Mm-hmm.
We're setting things up here for the first day, and we'll discuss what period of time a day is here in a few minutes. But
okay.
What are we really seeing here? We're seeing the Spirit of God move across the face of the deep. What deep? What are we talking about here? This always kind of loses people in the imagination of the scripture.
It's not actually a translation of the words. It's the imagination that of whoever wrote it, how they felt people could accept it, or what fantasy they could give to people to accept it, but it's not actually a translation of the words. It's not a proper translation. And I'll give you an example. The second sentence, I won't go through each analyzing each word at the moment. The second sentence, which is, you translate the deep, or it says, some translate it, the earth was astonishingly void with darkness over the surface of abyss, and God's Spirit hovered over the surface of the water. I'll give you my translation of it. Coming forth, the desire, see, in the first sentence you have wisdom, you have what's brought forth is boundaries, because you can't have existence and creation if you don't have boundaries. So you have boundaries, you have everything balanced, which could be heaven, but that's not what the word means. You have balance and you have desire. So now coming forth, the desire becomes movement without form and flow without shape. And an opaqueness on a presentation of endlessness and a sense of merciful wisdom of a power of boundaries is moving to and fro with an elevated comprehension of the surge of wisdom. That's the second sentence. A little bit different than the common translation.
I would say so. That's a lot different than what we have been handed down. So
correct.
What are we to grasp from this? Now, the Creator in this stream of writing is a single intelligence, or is this a collection of intelligences?
That's a very interesting question. And when one reads here, as we go on, we'll see that Adam and Eve is not actually necessarily the first people that were ever created. According to Jewish tradition, God was creating and destroying many worlds before he created this world. 967 worlds, the sages say, were created and destroyed before this one. So, according to Jewish tradition, this world is not the beginning of creation. The Jewish calendar actually counts itself from where Adam and Eve were created, not where the world begins. There's a lot of discussion what time existed before or if it existed. Actually, essentially, the way I'm translating it, and when I look into the spiritual meaning of the words and the grammar also, there's actually no physical creation here until much later on. While everyone talks about this as a physical creation, it's not at all. It doesn't happen till later. This is all energy, vibration, nothing physical.
Hmm.
Now, we're going to jump a bit, but just to give you an example of how I know it's not physical. Everyone talks about 6 days of creation, seventh day rested, okay? Now,
mm-hmm.
If you read it as a physical thing, then the sun and the moon are created on the fourth day. Now, how is it possible you can have day and night and that the sun and moon are created on the fourth day if they didn't exist before?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We
it's not possible.
That's correct. I mean, there's
religious people are trying, you know, religious people just say that's the way it is. You know, they try and they don't listen to what it's saying. The word day, which is translated in Hebrew, is very fascinating. You have to look at the formation of the letters. The formation of the word day is the following formation. It has three letters. One letter, which is called yud, is a dot. The second letter, which is a vav, is the same dot, but with a line that comes down. And the third letter is a square with a center in it. The idea of that is the dot, the source of life, of existence, is drawn down, that's the second letter, into a square, into a boundary. In other words, these are six levels of expression of life force within specific boundaries, not 6 days of creation, but 6 levels.
So we're not really talking about days like we understand a day of our Earth revolving on its axis and the sun appearing to go from horizon to horizon on our planet. We are talking about 7 levels, which could be periods of time. They could be
dimensions. There's no time here. These are 7 descriptions of levels of creation. It has nothing to do with time.
Right. And it does seem that most of the religious traditions of the world kind of get caught up in the time aspect. And I think if they could get past that, they'd be much more understanding here. Now, you mentioned that, and this is something that we do see in the cosmological record, and we also, as it turns out, might see it in the anthropological record, and that is that you mentioned that God had created and destroyed multiple worlds.
Correct.
We do see worlds being created in space, and we also see worlds and stars being destroyed in space. The intelligences that may or may not occupy those worlds don't end with those worlds. They go on.
Right.
And some of those intelligences, it appears, have ended up here on this Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So help us understand this concept a little bit better about creating and destroying multiple worlds and maybe why.
Okay. Let me go back for a moment to a question earlier, and then I'll come back to this. You asked who God is or the creator or what. Basically, in Judaism, the source of all existence, you can call God or creator or whatever, the source, has no form and no shape. It has no definition. So essentially we're going from an existence that has no definition to an existence of definition.
Okay.
Which is our existence.
Yeah. Right. He's undefinable by our terms.
Definitions, we can only understand things with definition. All we can understand is beyond that definition, but that's all. But to comprehend something with no beginning, no end, is beyond our ability. Because
speak for yourself. I mean, there are people who are meditating on this all the time.
Beyond my ability, okay.
No end is sometimes easy to imagine. I mean, I have taken and passed physical chemistry, so I understand no end.
Okay.
But no beginning, that's a tough one. That's a real tough one.
It is a tough one, absolutely. So within Judaism, it's an existence that has no beginning, no end. And this existence is the source of everything that exists. So that means that everything that exists makes no difference to that creator. In other words, all the reasons people give why we're here, why God wants us, are only ways and excuses they want to pacify themselves as to why they're here, but it's not why they're here. Because all the reasons we give have limitations. And in order to understand why everything exists, you have to go to a source that has no definition in order to know why everything is here.
Okay.
So it's a little bit abstract, but it's okay. Now, so the when you go into spiritual realms, the physical realm is basically one realm. It has many levels, but it's one realm. The spiritual realms have many different realms, many different levels. So what to us in this world is spiritual, and people, I taught Kabbalah for many years, people describe all different levels and worlds and angels and souls and all different things. All these descriptions and things that people talk about are low spiritual realms. And for higher spiritual realms, those spiritual realms are physical. So you're talking about an infinite amount of spiritual realms. Now, infinity is also limited.
Okay. What is it? Are we talking about limits of energy? Are we talking about...
No. If something is infinite, then it is also limited. See, people see infinite as always unlimited. They don't realize that when you have a definition of something, you define something, you give it a limitation. When something is infinite, it cannot be part of a finite existence, because then it's not infinite anymore.
Well, that's true. So, I mean, when we put
so
things, for instance, we have
a
set of mathematics in cosmology, which we call the metric tensor, and it's a pretty useful matrix. The problem is that most of the answers that we get out of the metric tensor, when we put problems into it, either come out infinitesimally small, too small to even consider, or they come out infinity. Neither one of the answers are really useful to us. We like to have something that's, you know, measurable, comprehensible. So, to say that something is limited because we say that it's infinity, it's only because we're stupid humans and we really can't, we don't have a word that means undefinable. It's sort of like, you know, 7 divided by 0. It's undefinable. It's such a large number that we consider it an illegitimate mathematical operation. But but really, it is legitimate. We just don't understand it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what Judaism does is it says, in order to connect with the source of all existence, you have to go beyond the finite and beyond the infinite. A place that beyond all definition, there everything is equal. There's no differences, no up and down, no right and wrong. Everything is the same. And then when you come back to the body and to the world, you're coming from a different space. And because of where you're coming from, everything is equal. And that's what happens when you connect it directly with the Creator. You can come back to this space.
Ah, that's an interesting point. That is an interesting point. Well, let's go back to the creation. We kind of breezed through it a little bit.
We'll go off everywhere, but we'll come back. Okay.
I have a couple of people who are writing in on Skype. They're too cowardly to call in. I'm not saying they're cowards. I didn't say that, did I? Of course I did. The phone line, if you want to call in and get involved, is 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. My guest tonight is Rabbi Yossi Severiansky. He's known by his friends as Rabbi Yossi. That's how we're going to address him tonight. One of the things, I mean, it appears to me is perhaps I can play the role of scientist today, only with an open mind. It looks like in the Genesis version of creation, that there was this massive water planet in the void of space. But my observation here is that the water, at least from the description that's in the English version of Genesis, was not frozen, and it's not a boiling mass of steam. It's liquid. And liquid water needs a very narrow set of limits to exist, especially in space. Planets within these limits appear to be very rare. Astronomers call it the green zone. It's sort of the Goldilocks zone. Not too hot, not too cold. This is an orbit around a star that is just right for liquid water to exist. But there's no mention of a star in this first day. Is there a provision for this in the ancient record?
Well, it's a little bit different. The word water actually really means here a surge of wisdom of the Creator. It's because the wisdom is flowing everywhere, it's called mayim, which is we translate as water. So it's still a space that doesn't have definitions as we have it. It's just the wisdom of creation flowing everywhere. So it's still not a place for stars or anything to come into any critical mess, because it's just a flow everywhere. A flow of energy, okay. A flow of frequency, whatever you want, but it's just a flow of the wisdom.
Okay, I got that. So we may not be talking about a star. We might be talking about other forms of energy that aren't, shall we say, visible light. We might be talking about X-ray or even sound or even infrared, which of course wouldn't appear as light to anyone looking, or a star of anyone looking out into space, but it would provide enough heat for this water planet to remain liquid. That's very interesting.
Okay. Now, for sentence three, where it says God said there should be light, the word light here actually doesn't mean light, as we know light. The word light here is clarity.
Aha, that's what I was looking for. Okay.
So what existed there was an openness where everything was clear. There was no such a thing as a blockage. There was no element. The vision was from one extreme of existence to the other. Whatever existed could see everything. There was nothing that was hidden. Everything was clear. There was no question. There was no need for answers. Everything was clear.
Well, we often talk about the perspective of space from different points of view. And we had Dr. Ed Close on the program talking about transcendental physics last year. And he mentioned that from the photon's perspective, all of the universe is local. Because at the speed of light, time slows down to zero. So everything is visible at one time. And wow, did the bells go off. We really, that's a very neat perspective. You know, here we are slowed down or possibly sped up to where we humans now perceive time.
Right.
The photon would never perceive time as we know it. The universe could age and pass away in a second. To a photon. But really what it means is to the photon, the Big Bang never happened. It only happened to us from our perspective.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's correct. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello? Yeah. That is correct. And actually, what it says in Psalms, it says that a thousand of our years is one day in his eyes. And Kabbalistically, what happens here in 15 years happens on another level in 1 minute. What happens here, as you expand more spiritually, in the spiritual, it loses definition. And things happen within a split second that here could take eons.
Interesting. Interesting. Rabbi, we have John from Vancouver Island, Canada, on line one.
Hi.
Welcome to the program, John.
Hi, Brooks. Hi, Rabbi Yossi.
Hi, John. How are you?
Hi. I just thought, since no one else was calling in, that I would just call in because it's a talk show. But this is really, really beyond me. But I'll just throw this one thing out.
Mm-hmm.
And that is... I've been looking at pi.
Okay.
You know, the relationship between
the
circumference and diameter, and how it's not calculable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been referred to as a transcendent number.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And to me, on some intuitive level, it makes sense because, like, that works for a circle, but in a fear, it's not about calculating the limit of it. It's actually a ratio that can go infinitely large and infinitely small, and so it should be.
Right. And actually, you're correct, and that's why every person is the center of the universe, because it's your consciousness that creates and allows the universe, and from you it expands and from you it contracts infinitely both ways.
Okay, okay. What else do I have in my mind? So I'm somewhere...
The universe, okay. You don't know what to say.
Well, this is pretty deep stuff. Just one
That's
other thing. Whenever I hear talk about water, I know this doesn't really make sense, but because of the idea of the redshift leading to the idea of the expansion of the universe, I've always had problems with that, because I've always thought that well that could be a diffraction problem, especially if you're talking energy coming into the system. Like, I don't believe the universe is a closed system, because if it was closed, it would lead to entropy.
If it was closed, it would have had self-combustion a long time ago. It couldn't exist the way it exists. I think you're right. There has to be an openness.
Yeah, and so what I was thinking of was that the redshift had more to do with, like, the way light refracts, say, between coming from air into water, where it gets, you know, diffracted. And to me, the redshift has more to do with difference in two mediums as energy is coming into the system.
Well, it could. I mean, the way we speak of it when we spectrographically look at the universe, because we're just sitting here on Earth, not really traveling out in space, is we're looking at this from the perspective of the Doppler equations. That is to say, the speed of light is constant, but a body moving away from us will have a tendency to stretch out the wavelength and thus shift it more toward the red frequency.
Yeah. Well, okay, let me put this out. And I got into the idea of moving clocks go slow. Now, why do we have a future? Does the future not exist? If the future exists and we're moving into it, it sort of implies that the future is moving faster than what we are in the present. So a faster movement implies slower clock movement, and that would stretch wavelengths somehow. That's sort of how I was thinking about it.
Well, I like the concept. The way physicists look at the future and the past is they're both the same distance. It's the arrow of time moves equally in both directions. But as we were saying earlier, John, it's more like we perceive time, because we've sped it back up from our perception, our observation. But in reality, all of the universe is local. So there really is no past and future. We just are stuck in the now. But from a physics point of view, if there was a now, we wouldn't have any idea how fast it travels in space.
Well, I see that as the problem in measuring time. Like, if you actually could measure a second, it would mean you would start at the beginning of a second and at the end of a second simultaneously. That's how you would get an accurate measurement of a second. And unless the only other way is like through degrees on a, you know, curving time. But really, it's like measuring, say, an 8-foot 2x4. You start, you know, you're simultaneously starting at the beginning of it, and at the end of it with a tape measure, and you get an accurate measurement. But you can't do that with a second. Measure the beginning of a second, which you arbitrarily put 0 on the beginning and 1 on the end of a second, but you're not doing it the way you're measuring a 2x4. you're actually waiting somehow.
Hmm.
In other words,
the idea of
measuring a 2x4,
save a lot of walking.
You're in two places at the same time. If you could do something similar with a second, you'd be two times in the same place.
Hmm.
You'd be there simultaneously at the beginning of a second and at the end of a second in the same way that you would measure a 2x4. But we don't do that, if you know what I mean.
No, but
we don't actually
I
know.
Do think it would be kind of cool to have a tape measure that would measure a 2x4 from the middle. It would save
right,
a walk.
Right.
Actually, interesting. I think your observation is interesting and your thought is interesting. And just to add, in Hebrew, the word for time is none. It also has another meaning, to invite. You invite into consciousness how you want to perceive something, and that would be time.
Right. Well, the discussion on time and the measurement of time and the perspectives of time is a whole program in and of itself. As I said, I've taken physical chemistry, and I know for a fact that 4 months takes at least 2 years to get through. So, I've seen the second hand slow down to the speed of the hour hand on the clock in those classrooms. On the other hand, the really good stuff, the stuff I really enjoy, like the Super Bowl, it was in 5 minutes.
Right, okay.
So it's like this program, with everybody tells me it's 3 hours long. I still don't believe them. I've been doing it for 5 years. It's really over in about 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and when I listen to it, it feels the same way.
Oh, that's good.
It's really incredible what goes on in your show. But
well,
I don't know. I've thrown out my little bit, so I guess I'll get off and
well,
listen to.
Well, I really appreciate it, John. You bring a perspective to the program that's very cool, and we appreciate you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much.
All right, Rabbi, you were talking earlier about, this is also available on your website, which is revealingthesoul.com. So if you want to go deeper into anything Rabbi Yossi is saying tonight, if you want to contemplate on this, if you want to print it out and meditate on it, go to revealingthesoul.com. He has a letter that he puts out every Friday. Those are archived. You can read them. But he also has stored on his website a large volume of YouTube lectures, which are fascinating. Grab something to drink, a sandwich, sit down, watch them. They're 7 or 8 minutes long. Your wisdom will increase, let me tell you. But in one of these you are talking about, with respect to creation, that we as humans have a tendency to look at things, first they're not there, and then they are there. And it's because we don't understand what came before. And you said the word is in the old record is sew, like sewing, like a needle pulling thread. Well, this is fascinating because there was a mathematician whose name was Riemann, and he came up with a mathematical process called Riemann's cut. And this is a mathematical way of looking at two-dimensional space, like living on a piece of paper or on a movie screen as cartoon people. And he described a way that there might form a cut in the paper or in the movie screen where we can pass through the paper or the screen to the other side. Do you think it's possible that this so word could imply that this water planet we're considering in the book of Genesis might have had its waters divided in this manner?
I would say yes. And the reason I would say yes is because, as mentioned before, I translate the word mayim as not as water, but a surge of the flow of, with the wisdom of creation. So, yes, this is exactly what happened, that there are many levels of heaven, if you wish. And actually, as you go into the story of Genesis later on, and you have sentence six, where people translate, let there be a sky in the midst of the waters. Actually, it's not actually a sky. What it is a filter, an expansive filter. It emits a surge. And it distinguishes between surge and surge. So you have it written there.
Interesting. Interesting. So the firmament that was placed between the waters, what does that mean?
It's not a firmament. It's a filter.
So the filter is putting a part of the water on one side and part of the water on the other side, and right. The part that comes through into our dimension, into our universe, into our perspective on which we sail around, this world that becomes the creation of day number three, which we're about to discuss.
This is the surge of life force that we can accept in this existence. Because if we had it from a higher level, a different level of surge, we wouldn't be able to exist.
Oh, I see. Because if we existed in a higher form, then we would not be having a mortal experience.
Correct.
Aha. Very important. Good perspective. Well, now, let's see here. You said that light is not the way we think light is.
Correct.
Are we talking about just energy, or are we talking about spiritual presence?
We're talking about clarity. Everything is clear.
Ah.
And the word darkness actually doesn't mean dark. It means opaque.
Oh, so you can't see. It's
right.
Unclear or blocked.
Right. It's like a blinding light, but it's not a light. It's so powerful that we just can't see it. It blinds us to look.
Interesting. Quite fascinating. I this is really opening up a lot of perspectives for me.
Now the word for day two, each day one, which what we explained earlier means just an expression of the creator within defined boundaries. The word for day one is actually expression of unity. The word for day two, sheni, also means change, expressing change.
You mean like a metamorphosis or just a constant rate of change?
In the first day, everything was unified, totally unified in one, in all ways. But the idea of the second day is already there's a shift and a change in the flow. There are levels created. There are distinctions made. So it's a change from the unity that existed before.
A change in the unity that existed before.
Right. So day one is just an expression of what existed in unity, in total oneness. It's not like two things coming together as one, but it was a total oneness.
Mm-hmm.
Day two is really an expression of change and shift in that consciousness.
So would we consider this, at least from our mortal perspective, would we consider this division or multiplication? I know that sounds a little strange
neither.
From a mathematician. So
neither.
It's neither. So source is still source.
And these distinctions only exist in thought. They're all in the same space.
So we're not separated at all?
No.
Well, then what are we fighting about?
I don't know. I haven't figured it out.
You know, once we get past day three, the Earth that's been created starts to go through this terraforming. First, plants are put on it, and they're let go through this level of whatever it is. Now, it could be just be algae or something to turn all of the methane and all of the CO2 into oxygen so that it can support animal life. But for a period of time, there's only plants on the Earth. And then the fourth day comes along, and all the animals are placed on the Earth. Or I might have my days mixed up. Fourth and fifth day, and then Adam comes along. And how does this change things when sentient man is placed on the Earth?
Because man wasn't placed on the Earth at this point. The change to physicality only happened after. And I'm going to explain this. And in explaining this, I'm going to explain that there were many worlds and many people that existed before Adam and Eve.
Ah, wonderful. I want to hear this.
Yes, you're going to want to hear it. Firstly, from a Kabbalistic perspective, what it says is that the only souls, the souls that we have are all souls that were connected with Adam and Eve. The souls that were not connected with Adam and Eve did not come into this realm. So there you have a whole existence of energy and souls that never existed here on this planet as human beings, and they've existed elsewhere, or they may be spiritual, never had anything to do with here. But there is that definition definitely expressed in Kabbalah. Now let me explain another thing. You've heard of this snake business and this tree and this Adam and Eve story. It's very interesting. The word in Hebrew for snake is nachash. Actually, the word nachash means a whisper in Hebrew.
Uh-huh.
The word chash means to feel. Now, the reason a nachash is called a snake is because it feels the ground. If you put it on silk, it has a problem moving. Smooth silk, but if you put it anything that has anything in it, it takes all the little bits and pieces and it moves on its belly. So because it moves kind of like a whisper, that's why it's called nachash. The word means whisper. So Adam and Eve it wasn't a snake talking to them. They felt a whisper. They felt like an intuition. They heard something suggesting them what they should do. So that's part one. There's no snake there. It's a whisper. It's intuition. The next thing is this tree and fruit of the tree. The word eitz in Hebrew, which I translate as tree, the reason the word eitz is called tree is because it means it's deeply rooted. It has many roots. Because of the roots, it's called eitz. Now, what that means is that there are many pathways that existed. And this whisper told them to choose a pathway of where to go for them and their future generations. In other words, all these pathways existed. They just had to choose what they wanted for themselves.
Ah.
So it's a little different slant on the story.
I reckon so.
And that is based on what the words mean.
So how did we get off on such a wrong track? Why is it that we believe that, you know, Adam was created from dirt and had the breath of life breathed into him, and then his assignment was to name all the animals of the earth? And we'll talk about Eve in a moment, but this is a being of perfection that has no belly button that I can see.
Right. Well, I wondered that also, and I thought, you know, everything, King Solomon was supposed to be a wise man, and he said everything happens in its time. And I thought, well, maybe what it was is that the energy and light of creation were hidden in these words, and they weren't taught to people. It was shown to people as a story, helped them their imagination. So essentially what it has in it has the secrets of creation, of the energies and formations in it, but it wasn't exposed to people. The text was kept away from everyone and understanding until the time is right for it to come. So till today, it has been a concealed book to most people, except for a few who have been able to understand it and study it in its proper depth. Most people have just been on the surface because it wasn't time. Now we're in a time where, because of science, because of where we've moved, we can now begin to understand these things, and so now it's time where these things can be revealed. That's exactly what the words are talking about.
Hmm. Okay. Well, we have Kevin on line one, and we have about 4 minutes left in the hour. So, Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hi, Brooks. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. We're having the most incredible deep discussion, and I think the lines are full. So, welcome. You're
okay,
a new caller.
Great. Oh, thank you very, very much. The question I have for the rabbi is probably one that... It's an interesting question. He's probably been asked this. Who is God?
That is a very good question. Essentially...
And also, what is his purpose? I mean, he writes has a book for us to learn. And what is his purpose? It should be very clear. Can you tell me about that?
Sure. You've asked a lot for a few minutes, but that's fine. Firstly, as I said earlier, there's no word in Hebrew as God. So you're asking not who is God. God is a power. There are many powers. You're asking what is the essence of existence? Where does it come from? What's our purpose? In order to understand that, you have to go to a space of no definition. So, for example, if two people are totally in love, they're together, they don't need to think, they're just in a space, everything is quiet, everything is, it can stay like that forever. You go to a space where you don't need the questions, you don't need the answers, you don't need to know anything, because as long as you need to know, you're going to limit what you want, what has to be according to your knowledge. You have to go to a space that's beyond you. Once you acknowledge is a space beyond you, you let go of your need to know and need to have the answers, then the answer of why you're here in this moment comes to you.
Well, wow.
In order
that's
to do that, you have to be totally in the present. Too many people are in the past, dragging the past, or worried, thinking in the future. So the energy of their body, you look at a person who's worried about the future, they're not in themselves, they're somewhere else. You look at a person who's worried about the past, they're elsewhere. But if you're totally in the present, everything you need to know is what you have with you, and you know exactly what to do in that moment. And then you know what to do in the next moment as each moment continues.
Okay, thank you very much. I really appreciate your comment on that.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Brooks.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. And we're going to begin hour two in about 4 minutes. Don't go away. We'll be back with more Rabbi Yossi after this. It's going to get deeper, wider, and even more interesting. We'll be back with more X Squared Radio after this. welcome to Hour 2 of X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. My guest tonight is Rabbi Yossi Sebriansky. To his friends and the listeners of this program, Rabbi Yossi, we sometimes speak of comprehension, and this is purely relative to the individual and their particular aptitude, that is to say, their degree of learning. What is incomprehensible to one person may be very understandable to another. The presence of this fact means that there is no limit to this comprehension, unless we could instantly see the extent of that comprehension for every soul that ever lived on the face of the earth. I might add that if one could do that, he would immediately have raised his own ability to a sufficient level of comprehension. Now, sounds like a lot of philosophy, but is it designed to remain incomprehensible, or are we tasked to see it and seek it until we can? We'll find out after 40 seconds. Don't go away. X Squared Radio is coming right back. Whether far out into space, beyond the reach of the most powerful telescopes, or deep in the soul of the nearest sentient being, the universe may be folded up inside each one of us. This hour, let's consider it with Rabbi Yossi. Welcome back to the program.
Hello, welcome.
Well, we, in our last hour, talked about creation and how incomprehensible it may be to the individual as we consider it. But Is it meant to remain incomprehensible to us, or are we ever inspired to try?
Some people are inspired to try and some not. I'm not going to tell people what they should or shouldn't be doing. But I think we have the brain, we have abilities, and I think we should use our abilities to the best of our of what we can do. And we have an ability of comprehension, and we can comprehend a lot once we allow ourselves to.
I think a lot of people have a problem
is they judge themselves, they prejudge what they can or cannot do, and because of that, they don't get beyond themselves.
I agree with that. I think that allowing yourself is most of the battle.
For sure.
Now, some would say that it isn't a matter of seeking it because, in fact, it isn't outside of us. It's rather a challenge of being it.
Yes, I think it is not a matter of chasing it because it is within, and it's a matter of being. The problem with that is the following. A lot of people search to become spiritual and think they've come to the light. The light is it. There are people who think they have this spiritual experience, and that experience is God. They have definitions, expectations, and so when something comes into what they imagine is what it should be, they've come to where they need to be. But they don't see the limitation of that. And so a lot of people, for example, say you have to be spiritual, but if they believe in a soul and we come from a spiritual realm, it makes no sense that we come from a spiritual realm to come here just to go back. it makes more sense to say that if we're here, there's a reason to be here, because in the spiritual realm, we're only spiritual. Here, in the physical, we can accomplish something that we cannot accomplish if we're only spiritual.
Well, right. I mean, you don't have the limitations of the mortal body upon your imagination. You don't suffer pain, for instance. You don't feel the limitations of fatigue or of lack of imagination or experience. If you're totally spiritual and you stub your toe, you're not going to feel a thing, I think.
Right. But if we believe that there is a purpose in creation, we believe that we're here for whatever reason, even if we don't know it, if we live in the now, then now we are a spiritual, a soul, in a body. We have two parts of us, and they're together. And the reason they're together is because they're supposed to be together. So if we live totally in the present, we can transcend our spiritual limitations as well, because we accept both in the same space.
Excellent. Excellent. That's exactly, I think that's, I mean, wow, I have so much to say. The mortal experience, many people say that it is a curse, it is limiting us, but it really is not. I think you've really hit on it here, that the combination of the spirit inside the mortal body really takes the spirit to the next level, and it surely takes the body to the next level.
Correct.
I mean, were it not so, why would the great ones, the Moses, the Abrahams, the Jesus, why would the great ones come here to have a mortal experience when they were already such great spiritual beings?
Correct.
Sorry. I had to get
something. You're asking me a question or you're saying a statement?
Well, I'm doing both.
But
and
you're
I was taking a drink.
Your thought is correct. If you question everything that exists, you question everything that happened, you come to a place where there is no real answer other than we have to accept that there are things beyond our ability to do. I'm going to give you an example of something, okay?
Okay.
How this applies. You've heard of biogenetic engineering of food?
Yeah.
Now, biogenetic engineering of food is a big problem, a very difficult and grave problem, and the consequences of it long-term can be very dangerous. But in the name of business, they do what they do. In the name of health and humanity, you wouldn't do that. It is very interesting. In the Zohar, the basic book of Kabbalah, a Jewish book written around 2,000 years ago, it says the following. It says that evolution happens naturally. There's a natural evolution. And according to the Bible, you can mix the same type of fruit with the same family of fruit, the same animals. You can mix within a family, but you cannot mix from one thing to another. And the Zohar says that when you mix, you have to know the movement of all the planets. You have to know all the emotional, spiritual, psychological elements of both elements before you mix them. So you know the precise moment that it's okay to make that mixture. And if you don't know all the elements in creation that affect it, the past, present, future, spiritual, physical, then you're not allowed to make the mixture.
Well, that makes complete sense, and having been
right.
a former Air Force member, and also having reviewed the typical government procedure for mixing things and trying things out, I see they do it exactly the opposite of what you just suggested. First they mix
Correct.
And see what happens, and then
That's
they
right.
decide. It probably wasn't a good thing to do.
Right. So what I'm giving us an example to show that we as human beings often try to do things with an agenda, with an ego, with a limited space that we have, and we try to do things and think we're clever and great. But the essence is far beyond often what we see. But if we understand that everything is more than what we are, then we're always humbled by it. And then we always look for it. And when we do things, we don't exclude things. We try to include everything.
Sure, there would be great consideration. There would be great prospective, not just perspective and not just hindsight. Gee, I guess it wasn't a good thing that we mixed those two things together, was it? and one of the other things that I noticed about bioengineering, since you brought it up, the earth and all the minerals that are in it are basically the food that makes the seed grow into the plant and thus give forth fruit, which we then consume, whether it's the leaves, the stalk, the fruit, or the seeds of that plant. But the flesh that makes up that plant that we consume, either by eating the plant directly or eating the animal that eats the plant, it is from the earth, and thus the earth makes up our body, and therefore we resonate with the earth. But when we change that combination artificially, we cut DNA apart and splice in other DNA. Like, believe it or not, they splice in jellyfish DNA to make corn more resilient to pests. Now, those two weren't meant to be together, I can tell you. I don't think that you would throw jellyfish out on the cornfield and mix the two together. But that is, in fact, what happens. What is truly happening is the resonance between the planet and the beings that live upon it is beginning to artificially be upset.
Right. That's correct.
So people would say,
basically,
well,
what I see, we can go into genetic engineering. There's a lot to talk about that. But what I see is that when we want to understand something, we have to come from it not just intellectually. We also have to come with our hearts. We have to come with both. It has to be a combination of our whole being in order to relate to something. If we only relate to it with one part of ourselves, we're blind to everything else. And we as humans have the ability to be more than that. So whether it's in religion, whether it's in politics, whether it's in science, for some reason, people seem to ignore that. And so the people that seek what is the truth and what is beyond everything seem to be not the majority or not the people doing everything. But people really want the truth, I think. People really want to connect, but they're just not shown how to. And I think your program, from what I hear, and what I'm trying to do is trying to help people see there is beyond what they've taught and learned, and they can do it themselves. Once people are aware and open, they search for it, they look for it, and they'll find it because they truly want it.
I couldn't agree more. And this awareness, I'm going to call it when you wake up, when you are awakened. There has to be a word for this in the scriptures. You know, we're not here just to breathe air and consume food and respirate, grow old, and die. We are here to not only have an experience and, of course, be acted upon by the universe, but we are here to act upon the universe and upon each other and to interact with one another, to love one another. And this experience changes the spirit within the body. Because face it, your spirit is being stressed just like your body is being stressed by the environment in which you live. But you can either go through it being acted upon or you can turn on it and act upon it. That action is why you are here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I don't want to get too much into the genetic engineering, but we can definitely do that in the third hour. What I would like to do in this hour is try to discuss the very strange anthropological position we find our human race in upon this very rare planet in the middle of space. We have somehow, Rabbi, divided ourselves into tribes and traditions and races, and we don't get along. And I don't get it. What are we doing wrong?
Well,
what did we miss?
That's a very good question. There are two different perspectives of this. One perspective is, what did we do wrong and what do we have to fix? And the other is, everything is the way it's supposed to be and we'll get to where we're supposed to get when we get there.
Well, that sounds
like... Two ways one can go. Either way, it's a question of, where are we in the present? Whether the past is right and wrong, it's not our place really to judge. What we are here is we can learn from it. And if we learn from it, then everything, we transform it to being a positive thing, even though what happened may have been negative. But we've taken something out of it. It's had a purpose and a reason. So, to say what the problems are, everyone, I'm sure people write about it. There's a lot. Why people did it. Biblically, if you go back to the beginning of time, you look all through time, you see God chose many different people, and these people did things that the Bible says not to do. And yet God chose them to be leaders and people in his generation.
Sure.
Very interesting. In other words, we weren't created to be perfect. We were created with faults. We were created with imbalances. We were created to be that way. Because if, in a certain way, if everything was totally balanced, there's no movement. So in order to create movement, imbalance was created. So imbalance holds balance, and balance holds imbalance. So our never being 100% perfect is exactly the way we're supposed to be. We're perfectly imperfect. Okay.
So there are individuals who are playing, or shall we say, serving roles in
right.
this experience we call the human race in the now, mm-hmm. 2010.
Right.
And the divisions, the prejudices, the grudges and conditions that when judgments that we lay upon each other is all part of the design, all part of the creation?
I would say it's part of the design of the Creator, even if I don't understand it, because I don't want to judge. I'm not interested in judging them right or wrong. I don't agree with things. I think, from my perspective, I wouldn't do it, but that's the way it was. So rather than getting into the negative energy of it, I said, okay, that's the way it was. Let's see what I need to do now. But when you look back at history, people with good intentions created problems. And you look at religions, for example. They started with beautiful ideas, a lot of them, and then the next generation took it in a different direction. A lot of things started with initiated. And in ancient times, there were, I guess, many different elements, many different reasons why people did things. But from one perspective might be is that people understood that there was a power of existence beyond the physical. And the idea of the Tower of Babylon, where the Tower of Babel, according to the Hebrew, it says they were all united, all people understood all languages, they were all one. And that oneness, knowing the power, they knew how to harness the power of oneness in the world to create new things. And they used that power to come together to create what in their mind was a way to eventually have control over everything and not be dependent on the force that everything comes from. So when that happened, and that was their agenda, that agenda caused their downfall, that they all became broken. Because they were doing this with their agenda. So they didn't intend to create, to have things this way, but people had their agendas and ideas beyond just being who they are, and that since they tried to get beyond who they are, they fell backwards as well. When you try to add, you detract as well. So it was part of the balance and imbalance that existed that people may have not fully understood.
Well, I see the tragedy of this, you know, laid out.
That's how we come to where we are now.
Right. And I see that the tragedy of this laid out in the scriptures, David.
Right. So rather than get involved into the whys, and that's a whole story, and everyone can have their perspectives, what I do is try and focus on the present. How can I exist and be in the present, totally centered, all the time, as much as possible, so that if anything shifts, anything happens, I stay centered?
Sure.
I think the best we can do is, as earthquakes go or things shift around us and we feel the shifts, the best thing we can do is find a way within ourselves that we can stay centered.
I agree with that. Some would say in the modern age that we live in the now. And, you know, physicists try to consider or quantify the now. And it's difficult to do. If there was one, as I said earlier, we wouldn't know how fast it moves through space. But we can say, is the now that we perceive a laser point, or is it a headlight? Do we consider a little bit of the road ahead of us and a little bit of the road behind us while we are in this spotlight we call the now?
That's interesting. If you look at society with all problems, it's like a broken pencil. If it's a broken pencil, it's pointless.
That's good, right.
Whether you say headlights or whether you say whatever point, they are intellectual perceptions of things. What we're trying to do is not only have an intellectual perception, but have the mind and heart work together simultaneously.
I like that. Okay, so the heart, which some would say is a perception itself, is really your spiritual considerations, and your mind or your brain is just the lens for the soul. You're trying to bring those into alignment one with another. That is what you're saying is the now.
Right.
Very good. I like that a lot. That makes a lot more sense than things I've heard from others, I can tell you.
So let me explain how it works. The last time I checked, I have a brain somewhere in my head, and I have a heart. Now, you know, I think sometimes I have emotions, I have feelings, and I was wondering, you know, some people are more in their mind, some people are more in the heart, some people are totally in the mind, some totally in the heart, and some people's thoughts are only directed by the heart, some feelings are only directed by the mind. Everyone is a different combination. I was wondering, how is it that my mind and my heart can work together? So I said to myself, okay, the first thing, if you have a relationship with someone, you have to respect the other person, you have to accept them for what they are. And when each person accepts the other what they are, respects them, and loves them, they can work together, even if they're different. So my mind and my heart are different. So I thought to myself the following. My mind thought that it will accept the heart. Even though the heart is different, whatever the heart feels, it feels. The mind is not judging. The heart feels it, it's fine. The heart accepted whatever my mind thinks, it will think. And it will accept it. And then afterwards, they will work together to see how to react to something or what to do. And I found this a very important thing in life. If we want to live with the world, with people, we have to not judge, not even judge ourselves. Accept everything, that's the way it is. Now that we accept it the way it is, we can listen and then see where we go forward with it. And if people did that, it would be a different world automatically. Hello? Hello?
what happens is we appreciate his expertise. So we are now back on the air with Rabbi Yossi. My apologies. We just lost the connection, and now we're back. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Where did I get up to?
We were just talking. You were getting ready to explain something to me, and I said, okay, and then the line went dead. So,
So I'll go back to it.
Okay.
I was trying to explain about the heart and the mind working together. That my mind at one point said, okay, my heart has feelings, has emotions. If I want to work with it, I have to accept it. And my heart felt, well, if I have thoughts, mind thinks, it has to accept that as well. When you want a working relationship, each side has to accept the other. They have to honor them, they have to love them, they have to respect them.
And when you
respect someone and honor them, you listen, and then you look where to go forward after each one gives its idea. So my heart and my mind are the same thing. I think whatever I think, and then I see how to feel about it. I feel whatever I feel, and then I think I work together in harmony. And I think that if people learned how to do this within themselves, the world would automatically change and be what it's supposed to be.
I don't know if things... Well, I was going to say, I don't know if things work automatically with humans. I haven't seen things work automatically, but usually we call these temper tantrums... 2-year-olds, everything is an automatic with them. They don't think about anything but what's going on at the moment.
But that would be okay. Children are children, and a lot of temper tantrums, a lot of things are affected by often the things we eat, the things in the environment. We live in a very toxic society, which creates a lot of imbalances. But if you have, once you have... people introspecting and growing in themselves and balancing, then the way we teach is by example. The kids would do exactly the same.
Well, usually that's a good thing. I have been told that I was a great dad, and people ask me, how did I learn how to do that? And I said, well, I learned from my parents, because I just did the exact opposite of what they did. And that's how I turned out to be a great dad. So hopefully we don't carry it forward by example, but we do learn from the example, that's for sure. And I agree.
Right.
Teaching and leading by example is the best way.
Mm-hmm. So now, the more people that think about creation, think about existence, and think about why we're here and what's happening, it's in a sense, it's searching. In a sense, it's letting things be. It's both. When you let everything be what it is and don't judge it, then you look to see where to go with it and from where it is, from that space.
When we look at the anthropological, and what I mean by that is we have sociological conditions that this planet is under right now. And the rate at which things move on the planet right now with this new neural network we call the Internet, with Twitter, with Facebook, with email, with Skype, and the ability to talk to one another around the globe instantaneously, the ability to communicate, to transfer ideas, to inspire, to move information almost instantaneously between groups of human beings.
Right.
Our sociological condition is really going through a metamorphosis right now. And I think what I see, Rabbi, is I see that people that I would consider to be rooted in belief, in tradition, in ritual, from what they have learned in their religious training, mm-hmm. is being turned upside down, because mm-hmm. as fast as they ask a question, they are getting an answer. They can really seek out the wisdom of these things. But what has been missing, I'm pretty sure, is this connection back to the root language. That's why your perspective is so important to us. what was originally meant for the sociological experiment called Mankind on Earth?
That's a good question. When you go back to ancient times and you look at the buildings around the world, and you see that around the world, different societies built the same things, did the same things, and we wonder, how did they have a connection, such a perfect connection with each other? And I've also worked with animal communicators, people who work telepathically and can tell exactly what the animals are saying and what the plants are saying, and it's quite uncanny. My experiment with it, I went with some people that did it to people's homes where they had animal problems. They would sit with the animal for a few minutes, communicate telepathically, and tell the people in the house all the problems of the house that the animal said, and they were always 100% correct. So what I saw is that the way the communication was not in the words we use. It was more like pictures, ideas. We also communicate with each other with feelings. We pick up feelings. If you don't translate the feelings into words, or even feelings, it's an amazing space as well. So we have some of the ideas of communication this way. The communication on a soul level or on spiritual levels is not in words we use, but it's really just a transferring of energy that feeling has all the information in it. So in ancient times, when people's spirits was much more whole and complete, the souls were complete, they were also open to a much greater force of spirit or soul energy, so they were able to tap into this much easier and communicate and do things that didn't need so many words.
Well, I can understand we get lost in the word, or we get deceived in the word, or we get divided in the language of words.
Right.
And maybe this telepathic way is a way of healing this rift. And maybe it was the way we were meant to communicate with one another in the first place. But it seems if the languages were confused the way it was written in the Old Testament, that somebody had a different idea. They didn't want us to communicate one with another, and they stirred up the pot a little bit.
Yeah, I would actually agree that people have stirred up the pot. One of the things that says interesting is that when God brought a revelation at Mount Sinai, and he spoke. Now, firstly, you heard of the Ten Commandments?
Right.
Well, actually, in Hebrew, it doesn't say Ten Commandments. It says ten sayings, or ten manners of speech. It's called Aseret HaDibrot. Dibur is speech. Ten manners of speech. That's a little bit different than Ten Commandments. And it changes the whole book. So that's another interesting topic. But what it says, according to Jewish tradition, that when God spoke, all the people died. Their energy in the body left their bodies. The bodies couldn't contain it anymore, and it left. And the people, and then it says God had to put back the energies into the body, and the people said to Moses, please, you talk to us, we cannot contain that speech, that manner of speech. And so Moses was the one that gave over the words. And it was actually, according to Jewish tradition, intended at that point that words shouldn't have to be used anymore and people would be in a space that they wouldn't need it, but people could not hold on to that energy and that power. So what happened was, because people couldn't contain that power, they were given words eventually, and more words and more words. And as people were given words, instead of using these words as a conduit to get beyond the words, they used the words to close himself even more and become more dependent on words.
Ah, right, right. So this is where the rote memorization and the rituals and the rules and limits came in.
Right.
Wow. Because you really do see that. By the time you get into Numbers and Deuteronomy and on, you're going, oh, gee, only so many steps on a Sunday, and you have to walk counterclockwise or clockwise, and boy, there were just rules and measures for everything, and this was
right.
All words.
Mm-hmm.
Goodness.
Right.
Well, so this is how, from an anthropological point of view, we ended up where we are. And I don't really want to use the words ended up, because this is a dynamic process that seems to be changing moment by moment, 24 hours a day, because
absolutely.
While it is, you know, now 9:45 p.m. here, it's, you know, close to 5 o'clock in the morning in Israel. And it's even, you know, later in the day tomorrow in the Far East, in China and in Japan. And things are happening at such a rate, real time, that the social condition, the anthropology of mankind, is changing moment by moment. And I guess what I'm trying to get a feel for this hour is, now that we know the root, the real meaning behind some of these ancient words, and I think, you know, I'm each moment with you, I'm learning, I'm unlearning things that I learned when I was a youth that didn't make any sense to me then, but I followed my whole life. And now I'm empowered, I'm sort of freed to really understand what it is I've been feeling and thinking my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe mankind is ready to do that as well.
I think it is. Yeah, I see a lot more opening, a lot more people aware, and it seems to be reverting and going back on a journey to where it's supposed to be.
Well, I was going to say it's about time, but it's only been 4,000 years since we've been doing this.
It's about time. We're getting beyond time.
Well, one of the things that you mentioned earlier is, by the time Adam got here, there had already been other races of man that had been here and gone many times before.
Right.
Share with us your insight on that.
Well, I remember as a child having heard a story about King Solomon, that King Solomon spoke to Ashmedai, the head of the demons, and asked him about creatures of other dimensions, and it says that he asked him to bring him someone from another place, and King of the Demons, Ashmedai, brought him a two-headed man from another place. And then King Solomon eventually said, take him back, and he said, no, I'm not taking you back, it's too far to go. It's in our time, a 500-year journey to get to that place.
Wow.
So that was an interesting story, which is told of King Solomon, and it's well known in Jewish tradition. But it also got me thinking, because if you read the Ten Sayings, or they're called Ten Commandments, it says, God says, do not make an image or form of me of anything from the heavens above, from the earth below, things below the earth. So from there, there's already a sense of something above the heavens, something below the earth, to other existences simultaneously as we have here. Other dimensions, if you wish, or realities. So when I look at these things, it also says in Genesis that the earth, the dry land, that the water was taken away and the dry land appeared. It appears it was there already before, just it was covered. And the same thing, the whole story of creation, if you don't translate in the beginning, you translate the word understands with wisdom, you understand there are other creations or other beings of all different types. And when you come to Adam with pathways, they're all different pathways. So it appears that we have knowledge mainly of the dimension we live in. The dimensions we don't live in are usually only individuals who have understanding and ability to understand them. But it's not for most people. It's like people ask me, well, help me with my past life issues. So, yeah, I've helped some people in that, but for the most, if people fix up the present, the past fixes itself as well. In the same way, if we fix ourselves and the world we live in, then the other dimensions will open up to us, and we'll start seeing these other things and relating to these other beings, and it won't be a mystery anymore. But it begins with us centering ourselves.
Well, I'm trying to take away from this something about we as individuals, now born on this planet, you may be 20 years old, you might be 70 years old, this lifetime, have you come to the realization that perhaps you have a lot more experience, more learning, more aptitude, more memory, as it were, than what you have gained in just this mortal lifetime?
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. I think a lot of people have memories of things and seem to know things and don't even know where they know it from.
Right.
There's another question. I used to think, where do thoughts come from? We all have different thoughts. And, you know, the thoughts, things happen, we have thoughts. But we have a lot of things come to us, and we don't know where they come from. And my perspective of that is that there is a life force, an energy, God, the creator, whatever you want, that gives everyone the thoughts they should have. So while on one hand, We think the thoughts we want. On the other hand, a lot of people don't think the thoughts they want to think. And things come. And while there are, you know, physical reasons why things come, physiological, spiritual, but ultimately everything is moving because there is a life force beyond everything that moves everything. And without that life force, nothing would move.
Okay. Well, now that life force, it's interesting. You watch the Earth evolve for, 4,000 years we were riding horses. And then all of a sudden this industrial revolution started in the mid-1800s. Right. And literally in less than 100 years we're flying. And another 30 years we're on the moon. And now we're freely communicating, or at least receiving information from outside our own heliosphere.
Right.
All this information poured out upon the Earth, and clever people knew how to interpret this information, but the information wasn't always there, or was it? For instance, I look back at the Tibetan stupa, and I look at the coils that Nikola Tesla built. And I see a striking similarity, but the stupa was created in the 7th century, and Tesla lived in the 19th century.
Right.
So has this information always been circling us from the cosmos, and only recently we've been able to pick out the pieces that work? I mean, heavier than air flight was not possible until Melvin Murrell in Morristown, Tennessee, and then Wilbur and Orville Wright showed us how to do it and control it. And then everybody kind of went, oh, yeah, that's how it's done. Next thing you know, we have transcontinental flights just a few years later. So is this information always flowing out there and we are new beings here tapping into it, or are we bringing that experience forward with us from a previous existence?
The information, all information is universal and exists. And it's only a question of what time, at what time or period is it supposed to be revealed to people. But that doesn't mean individuals don't know about it.
Well, they might know about it, but they might not know what to do.
I'll give you an example. A story, it was in the medieval times. I don't know, there are commentaries on the Bible. Rashi, Rabbi Natan, they lived in France, maybe 750 years ago. And it was Rabbi Natan. He didn't want to be disturbed of people coming to him, so he created some type of way of having light, like an electric light, and he had electricity in his house, and he also had the front in front of his house a landing that if someone knocked on his door at night and he didn't want them, it automatically it tripped, and so apparently whoever was king of France at that time or that area heard about it and came incognito to him and knocked on his door in the middle of the night, and the spring went down and came up, and he opened the door and said, "Welcome, Your Majesty." And the king said, "How did you know?" He said, "Because it's impossible for what I have here that it should come back up. It's made. What I have here is something that is not for this generation yet." The king said, "I heard you have a light that is always burning without putting this oil and stuff in it." He said, "Yes, but it's not for this generation." That was another story I heard when I was a kid. And what that story told me is that there were people who knew things in older previous generations, who maybe even did things, knew how to generate and do things, but they did not share it because it was not time for it.
Right. Wow. I mean, if you go underneath Dendera, which is was a temple built by the Hathors and then mm-hmm. burnt to the ground and rebuilt and then added on to some centuries later,
right.
You see what looks like light bulbs cabled up and used to light up the inside of the dark corridors of the underworld. This goes back a long way, incandescent lighting.
Yep, and there's no reason they shouldn't know it. If it's all it takes is a thought to do it, and it's a natural thing, why not?
Huh. All right, so the information's always been out there, and now we grasp onto it, we know exactly what to do with it, and we build it, and it works.
Right.
It looks like there's even more information being poured out upon our race of mankind,
mm-hmm.
and we're about to try it. We're about to turn on trans-dimensional engines that will allow us to dance across the expanse of space as easily as we sail from New York to London.
Right.
When we do that, are we going to understand more about the origins or at least the capabilities of our race, humanity?
Maybe yes, maybe not. The fact that we know more details or become more aware doesn't mean we know more about our origins. You see, one of the things that people often forget is the world is round. And the reason it's round is because it comes from a creator that has no beginning and no end.
Huh.
So, since that existence has no beginning and no end, as we develop and as we go, we will continue going in circles. And we'll learn more and more. It just continues. So, there's no beginning we need to go back to. As we move forward, that beginning moves forward with us. In each moment.
Well, again, we look at this from a physics point of view. We're not talking about moving forward through time because, after all,
right.
we're just in the now.
Moving forward in our knowledge and comprehension of things.
There you go. Yeah, we're expanding and growing as individuals. But then the people that know stuff, they pass away. And so they have to pass their knowledge on to the next generation. Or does that individual come back over and over again with more and more experience as time goes on?
You talk about reincarnation?
Well, some would call it reincarnation, rebirth. I think there's plenty of evidence in the scriptures that we are born again. We have existed in other worlds.
Yeah. Actually, in Hebrew, it's called Gilgal, which means rolling souls. That the soul energies just roll from place to place. They have their journey, and they come in and out of bodies. They'll come in, they'll come out, each one in its journey.
Wow. That is really something. So let's talk about that a little bit more as we get into the next hour, because there are sister religions to various traditions, Catholic mm-hmm. and Hebrew and Jewish and Mormon and Protestant, and I haven't found much room. I haven't found much, shall we call it, audience for the idea that the soul has a chance to grow through multiple mortal existences.
Okay.
How was that removed from the original writing?
Well, it's the way original writings are translated. They don't really do much of a job in it. But when you start looking at the words, I have some examples somewhere on my blog at revealingthesoul.com. It speaks, for example, if you desecrate the Sabbath or you do this, then you'll be cut off. Now, no one kills you. You're not cut off from anyone. What it's talking about, it's talking about being cut off from your soul source. Because you're not doing what you have to do, so you cut yourself off from who you are.
Well, I would say that the soul, the being that makes up Rabbi Yossi, that makes up Brooks, that makes up the listeners to this program, somewhat has, like you say, a rolling identity, a brief intelligence, or at least a spark that is contiguous with the experience of that particular soul, whether we're born in captivity or whether we're born free or wealthy or poor or sick or healthy. But with each life experience, that previous memory is blocked, and our society doesn't teach us to try to bring it back up. It just kind of comes naturally.
Right. If we were to remember the Kabbalah, which is part of Jewish tradition, Kabbalistic writings have many books on reincarnation, soul journeys, and what they are, and it describes them. It's not whole souls or half souls. Everyone is we each are a combination of bits and pieces of souls that existed in different pieces. So we're not, when someone says they reincarnate from somewhere, they're just, actually just a spark of that energy of that being that's here. So we're a combination, and during our life, different bits and pieces open up and close as they need to. And in Kabbalistic tradition, its interpretation of the words, the Hebrew words of the Bible, it talks about a lot of them as being reincarnation for different reasons and purposes. And what it says is the reason we're blocked is because if people were open to everything, it would be very confusing, very difficult for them to do what they need to do now.
Well, I could see that, yeah. Yeah, and I think that's maybe why the religious traditions teach us don't worry so much about that, because if you do, you're not going to pay attention to what you're supposed to be learning now and what you're limited to now, and you're not going to learn what you need to learn.
Mm-hmm. But it is very fascinating how it works, and it does affect us, and we do have the memories there, and they only come up when something opens itself up to us and makes us look at it.
Yeah, I like that. All right. Well, we'll talk about this a little bit more in the next hour. My guest tonight, Rabbi Yossi Sebriansky, known by his friends and the listeners of this program as Rabbi Yossi. I'm Brooks Agnew, and we'll be back in about 6 minutes with more X Squared Radio. Take a break, get a drink of water. We're going to be coming back with the infamous third hour of X Squared Radio. as you look out into the night sky, if you have a clear sky tonight after the program, realize nothing that you see out there in space is as old as you. Folded up inside of you is the information of the universe, the perspective, the challenge, the wonder of being alive on this earth at this time is a privilege beyond privileges. Energies, principalities, powers, looking upon you as the lucky one. No matter what your challenge, no matter what your weakness, no matter your life condition, you have the power to love. You have the power to change. You have the power to create. This is the infamous third hour of X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. My guest tonight, Rabbi Yossi Severiansky. His friends and the listeners of this program call him Rabbi Yossi. And his website is revealingthesoul.com. I recommend you go there. Check out the letters that he has written. Each Friday he adds more written content to his website. There are archives there. You could read them, learn the perspectives and interpretations and, I think, revelations on this ancient text that somehow either got glazed over or erased and replaced. Might open your mind. It might be the trigger that causes that ascension, that realization that you are who you are. And it is a great treasure, and you are perfect in that you are. And you should not judge yourself harshly. The other thing is that I want you to be aware that you could participate in this program. If you're sitting out there listening and wondering and have a question, you can participate. The phone line is 415-762-1161, 415-762-1161. As you feel this awakening, or you feel these moments of deja vu, you feel these downloads of pure information coming into your mind, knowing not what to do with it or where it comes from, listen up this hour, because we're about to crack it all open. We'll be back in 40 seconds. X Squared Radio is about to take off. We'll be back. Okay, here we go. Third hour, X Squared Radio. Welcome back to the program, Rabbi Yossi.
Pleasure being here with you.
I like being a student of ancient texts. I'm no expert. I know there are a lot of people who are not, along with me. But we're curious about it. We don't want to seem like dummies, but we do want to open our minds and open the perspective and maybe not be so prejudging as we accept or reject various traditions. We'll call them religions of the earth. In the old times, the really great observers, the ones that could grasp this information and put it into words and somehow record it and have it survive the ages, we now call prophets. Today, we might call those same individuals rabbis. We might call them scientists. We might call them explorers. How do we move forward with the next phase of humanity?
That is definitely an interesting question. There are two parts to that. How do we move forward with ourselves, and how do we move forward in humanity? There are people who want to change all of humanity, and that doesn't happen too often. it's a challenge changing oneself. And if a person spent all their life fixing themselves and working on themselves, they'd spend their whole life doing it. There's no time for anything else because we're always changing and you always have to balance. So there are different perspectives and different processes, if you wish, or different visions that different people have on what will be and how things will be. And while they're all interesting, they all reflect something about the people who are saying them and believing them or having the visions, because all those visions have their own limitations and their own issues. And when I was a child, my grandfather taught me many things. And one of the things he said to me, he said, Yossi, you don't understand something unless you know its limitations.
Ah. Well, how do you test the limitations?
Well, the limitations are the following. We live in the present. So when people tell us about what's going to be, they're telling us a possibility. When someone says, 100% for sure, this is what's going to be, or this is what is, in a certain sense, they're a liar. Because if they said, I am sure of this possibility, yeah, they can feel for sure about a possibility, but to say for sure it's going to be something is different, because things are always changing. So on this minute, it may appear that that's what's going to happen. The next minute, something, a different shift will occur, and it won't happen that way.
Yeah, well, physicists know this pretty well. And the listeners of this program can get glazed over sometimes with terminology.
When we look at what could be or what not and where things are from a perspective of everyone becoming reconnected again and at one, having their own connection directly with the Creator and creation. Because each person is a unique expression and each person has a unique connection. And when everyone does that, we won't need leaders. We won't need to have a king. We won't need to have leaders. Everyone will know exactly what they need to do as a unique being in creation. And everyone will understand this, respect it in themselves and of everyone else. And so the world will then transform to be a tranquil place with nature, all other dimensions, and humans all living together as one. And
well,
everyone being a unique self and different, because that's what they're supposed to be. We're not supposed to be all exactly the same.
Right, right. I mean, if you asked someone how many realities are there on the Earth, we'd have to say, well, there are pretty close to 7 billion of them, because everybody has their own perspective of what reality is. So Earth is kind of a mathematical average of realities of all the people that are on it. And, you know, if you have like souls thinking the same way, then maybe you have a little more weight toward one reality or another. But the truth is that from a quantum perspective, we are just talking about possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about probabilities and possibilities and the reality, the realization that we, in some sense, are all creators of that reality.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
In one sense, we're given an eschatological record that we are going to march down this pathway to Armageddon, blow the heck out of each other, and some savior is going to pop out of the sky, split a mountain in two, and save all the righteous, and the rest of you, well, you're going to burn as stubble. We have the ability to walk away from that, do we not?
Definitely, we do.
So if we can awaken enough humans, enough sentient beings on this planet, and get them to realize that they are, whether they like it or not, creating this reality, and get them to observe it as a possibility of this vision of peace that you have, that we are all living in harmony with nature and with one another, is it not a possibility?
Well, in looking at people, looking at history, thousands of years of history, and how people act and react and take advantage of others and hurt and do different things, it made me wonder, is that possible? It made me look at, you know, as long as people continue, there've been good people, bad people, different shifts in consciousness at different times in different countries, and there've been societies that were very peaceful and lived in harmony and wonderful, and what happened to them? And so, you know, as much as we do, that's great. And we can only do what we're able to do is teach people about harmony and teach people how it should be. But it still needs something beyond who we are as well. There still needs to be an acceptance of the force of all existence to accept that that's the way it wants the world to be. And I think by us doing it, and by having a huge group of people creating that consciousness, that brings the creator, the source of existence, to magnify itself into this place through the people doing it. We become conduits in bringing this shift. And it takes each individual, each unique individual human being together to do it.
Ah, all right, so we do this by finding a common language, or do we do this through force of will or an outstretched
hand?
We
do it by all commonly being decent people, by coming with a heart, by feeling a heart, allowing our hearts to be open, and be heart people with comprehension as well. And when we're heart people, we share, we give. But society has become so hurt from everything. People have created these walls and do not want to change the walls because they don't want to get hurt again. So it is complex.
Well, maybe we can do it in small groups, and then we can bring the groups together. Because when I turn on the news, I see the world's leaders.
Let me show you another insight in Adam and Eve.
I'm sorry, I was talking over
Adam
you.
Adam and Eve.
Say that again.
What?
I was talking over you. Go ahead and say that again. I'm sorry.
Are you talking over me? That's fine. Let's go back to Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve, it says people talk about the sin of Adam and Eve. Now, the Hebrew word is chet. Now, they translate that as sin. Actually, in Hebrew, there are other words for sin. Ava in Pesha. The word chet actually has another meaning. It means off-center. Imbalance. When you shoot at a target and you miss the center, that's chet. Off-center. So basically, what it's telling us is Adam and everything was balanced. Adam and Eve did something that created an imbalance. And because all existence resonated in one frequency, it brought an imbalance throughout creation, throughout existence. And since then, everything has had this imbalance.
Ah. So the resonation became like a dissonant chord.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So how do we bring this into harmony again?
So based on that everything is of one essence, it would take one human being to reconnect to that same space of resonance that was before all this happened. And when one human being can reconnect with that space, it would automatically cause that all existence would become rebalanced.
So is this going to take a single voice, a leader, to stand up and do this, or is this going to be a spontaneous combustion kind of thing, sort of like when helium freezes, it does so a few particles at a time, and then it suddenly occurs?
The individual who does it, the moment that individual does it, the individual will become irrelevant, because everything will be restored. So it doesn't really matter who it is or what it is. It just matters that it happens.
I agree with that. That takes the ego out of it. I think that that might work. I look at the world's leaders today, so-called leaders, or leaders as they suppose, and you listen to the words coming out of their mouth and you look at their actions. And at least in my opinion, and I'm probably not alone in this, it doesn't appear to be the kind of leadership that's going to make this happen. Something else.
I totally concur with that.
And I don't think the kind of leader that we're looking for or that we're talking about here is one that is going to be elected. Do you?
No, I don't think he needs to be elected or she needs to be elected. No.
You know, I just have a feeling that there's a good possibility that this individual or these individuals are on the earth as we speak.
They are.
And can you share more with us?
Well, when we elect a leader, the election of the leader is normally according to what the people are. And so it's sort of, you know, either they have to do what the people want, or it's a reflection of the issues of the people. There, it's not a pure place. A pure place takes pure people. Now, there are a lot of people on Earth that are actually pure in many ways. But each one of us is unique, each one of us is different, and each one holds a resonance of our own. I'll give you an example. Many years ago, my wife caused me, although I was born, I grew up in Australia, I came to the United States, and my wife caused me to, at some point, be in New York. And I didn't want to be in New York at that time, but I was there, and I was stuck there. And I asked internally, what am I doing here? And the answer I got is that, at that point in time, or at this point in time when I got the answer, the place needs the resonance of my soul energy, of my being. So I don't have to achieve anything or do anything, even know why I'm there. I just have to be there. And I was there for a number of years until I didn't have to be there anymore. And I found that fascinating. That I don't have to know why I'm here even. I just have to be. I don't have to do anything. In society, there's a lot, you know, you have to, what are you doing? What are you, you know, people want to know what work you're doing or what, you have to be doing something. And here, I didn't have to be doing anything. I just had to be. And I feel that's a more real place. And
I
if
really
we have people who can understand that, I think it'll, a whole group of people like that would make a major shift in the whole Earth's energy.
I really resonate with that. Just the presence of a being without
right.
doing anything. You just are in a state of frequency.
Mm-hmm.
The presence of that being in that environment shifted the energy of that environment just enough to perhaps affect the universe.
Correct.
So maybe what we're talking about, as the Kogi Mamas would say, are individuals who have become points of light or sources of light upon the earth. And just their mere presence in Phoenix, Arizona, or Los Angeles, or New York, or London, or Cairo is enough. Sort of like when Lot was present in Sodom, they couldn't destroy it.
Right.
so he had to leave. And then it could fall to its final low frequency of destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. This is really, really good stuff. When you say that, when you agree with me that there's a possibility that the individuals who could be catalysts to allow this reaction to take place, I'm going to talk of it in chemical terms perhaps, this coagulation, this changing of reactants or raw materials of humanity into product or a new crystal kind of resonance on this planet. If they do exist, are they just now born, or are they youth, or are they already knowledgeable of their magnificence and their purpose here on this world?
I would say they're souls that have very high or very specific frequencies, and that the individuals themselves may know that they're different, but don't necessarily know why or what it is.
Right. And maybe one day they'll just wake up or come out of meditation or realize that the sun is in the right place at the right angle with the right trees behind it and say, hey, I know what I'm supposed to be doing.
Exactly.
Wow, really fascinating stuff. I like it. So from an anthropological point of view, this development of the human race, this metamorphosis, this evolution of the race, mm-hmm. it could happen any moment, couldn't it?
Correct.
Hmm. One of my listeners writes in and says, if history is a lesson, when someone gets close to balance, those who are imbalanced rub them out.
Yes, that is, whoever wrote that in is very astute, and that is quite correct. That's what happens throughout history.
Well, hopefully we've learned enough from history that and I have to agree, by the way, his name is Alex, and he's in Salt Lake City, Utah. I have to agree, in history, what has happened when these enlightened ones realize their mission is they grab their walking stick and their best sandals, and they walk into the city, and they make an announcement that they've had an epiphany they want to share with everyone. And immediately the Romans or the guards or whoever are assembled, and he's right. They're rubbed out. But today, in today's society, you could actually make this announcement without walking into the city. You could make it with this neural net instantaneously around the world through Facebook, through Skype, through Yahoo, through a myriad of methods, and you could survive.
Mm-hmm.
You could even put YouTubes out there and teach people of the depth and glory of these ancient languages from the comfort of your own white couch in your living room.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a very interesting time, Rabbi.
And we sure do.
And the possibilities are being laid before us like never before at a rate of change that we have never seen before. Do you think the rate is changing? Do you think we're accelerating or quickening?
Well, I have wondered about that, because people do talk about everything happening faster and quicker. And I'm not sure anything's happening faster or quicker. I just think we're resonating at a different frequency. Because for some people, everything seems to be slow, and it's slower than ever. For others, it seems to be faster. It's really where our awareness is at.
Hmm.
And as our awareness becomes more expansive, things happen faster, but some things don't happen fast enough.
Oh, I'll say. I find myself patting my foot in front of the microwave. I guess my skin is tingling. My imagination is inspired. That even from a point of observation from that a scientist might make of the Earth. I look back a couple of weeks ago. Chile had an earthquake of 8.8 on the Richter scale. Certainly, one of the largest quakes in modern times. But the interesting results of this quake is that the Earth moved 3 degrees, not 3 degrees, 3 inches on its axis, and the days are now 1.3 seconds shorter.
Mm-hmm.
That happened in one day.
Right.
This is a change that if we were to look at it from a geological record, looking at rocks or volcanic eruptions and how igneous rock shows a vignette of magnetism over eons of time, we would say that it took 1,000 years for the Earth to move this 3 inches. But
right.
It did it in one day.
Right.
Maybe these kinds of activities happen much, much faster than what we have been taught.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why, in a religious perspective, when they talk about creation and things happening, they go into a 6,000-year thing, because while we relate to time as over billions of years, the possibility of those billions of years happening within a short period of time is also very possible. And so that's why some people just say, let's accept that it's 6,000 years and leave it there.
Yeah, let's just limit it to 6,000 years and that's the end of that.
That's right.
Well, when the scriptures, and I don't know if the Old Testament talks about this so much as the New Testament, it mentions a term called the quickening, when things do happen at a more rapid pace, like going from horseback to the moon in 140 years or something like that. Is this what they're talking about, this ability to assimilate and bring into reality these higher frequency concepts of creation?
I don't know exactly what they're talking about, but when we do bring higher frequencies of concept, it does change time and space as we know it, because we then live in a different consciousness.
Right, right, right. The frequency rises, the consciousness becomes more aware, and then it becomes self-feeding and just as resonance. I'm trying to explain this in very quick terms. It's sort of like playing tetherball. When the ball comes around, you strike it at exactly the right moment, and the ball goes faster and faster with more and more energy. But you're really not hitting any harder than you did the first time.
Mm-hmm.
What we're doing, actually, is we're beginning to resonate with the universe, and the universe is beginning to feed back that energy to us and create momentum toward this metamorphosis.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You mentioned earlier in this hour that we actually have never been separated from the Creator, from Source. Yet I could tell you, I know people who really feel like they're separated from this power, from this origin. They feel lonely. They feel disconnected. How did that happen?
When Adam and Eve in the story created imbalance, what the imbalance brought with it was a resonance of something's not right. And that something not being right was something that Adam and Eve couldn't comprehend. They had no way of relating to it. And so within all our existence, we feel, as much as we know, we feel that something is not balanced. There's always this feeling that there's something else, something more, something not balanced, we're lonely. It all is generated by that idea of when the imbalance was put into creation, and only when that's restored does everyone realize we were actually always in our place all the time.
Well, is it up to us to put the plug back in the receptacle in the wall so that we get the power, or isn't actually removed from us, is it? You know, someone once told me...
It's up to us to understand and be aware that it's only our perception, our feeling, but it's not what actually exists.
Right. Someone told me once, if you feel further away from God today than yesterday, who moved?
Right.
So if we're all connected to Source, and the planets and all the minerals that make up the planets, that feed the plants, that feed the animals, that feed us, that make up our physical bodies, if all of this is connected to Source, then we really can't be separated. We may feel separated, but if we really understand that enjoyment, I guess that's the wrong word. That would be a legal term. If we understand that link, that inability for those things to be separated one from another, then we should be able, as individuals, to link to one another and increase that life force exponentially to have this metamorphing force really become overwhelming on this planet. No army could stop it. No politics could obfuscate it. It would just happen on its own, like a popular song on the radio.
I totally agree with you. That's correct.
Wow. Very good stuff. We have about 6 minutes left. Is there anything that you've heard today, either from the callers or from me or from your own thoughts, that you want to add to tonight's interview? We've touched on a lot of deep subjects, and people are going to go away from this, and they're going to play it back. People will come into work tomorrow, put on their headphones, and listen to this archive and say to themselves, I'm going to revealingthesoul.com. I want to learn more about this. What could you add in the next 5 minutes that could help us have hope in humanity?
When a person has hope in themselves, then there's hope for humanity. When a person loses hope in themselves, they lose hope for humanity too, because we're all part of one essence. So if you want to fix the world, the only thing you have to do is fix yourself. And there's an old Jewish saying that God created the world perfect, everything the way it has to be. And the only thing that he gave me to fix is myself. And that's all I can do. And it's a full-time job.
Well, it's a full-time job for some. Some treat it as a part-time job. And some people are just flat out on vacation.
Absolutely.
I mean, I see a lot of people asleep at the wheel. I'm sorry. I see people that are not conscious that they're conscious.
Well, we're talking to live people. There are a lot of people that are walking around that are actually dead. They're just walking around. So we're talking to the people that are alive.
How do you reach those people? How do you get them to realize that they're not alive just because they're moving around and breathing and stuff?
I just do what I do, and I say what I say, and I don't have expectations of anyone or anything. And those that are ready for it, it shifts them, and then they shift and feel it, and they do what they need to do. And those who don't, don't. I didn't create the world, so it's not my responsibility. I'm responsible for myself and what I do, and that's as much as I can do.
Well, I understand. I didn't create the world either, but I created my perspective of it. So I'm trying to keep
my... Exactly, and that's what we work on and change and shift.
Right. I want to keep my perspective of it as close to chocolate ice cream as I can. Kevin writes in and says, also add one act of random kindness a day. This really changes things.
Well, with every, I hear that all the time, and I think that's always a good thing. But with every act of kindness that someone's doing an act of not kindness. So while I've heard for centuries about more good and it tips the scale, I think you have to also understand the energetics of it and the energies. And it's not just doing good or doing the other way. There are a lot of different intricate energies. So one good thing every day, but it's better to be good all to be a balanced person all the time, but that's even a more powerful force. When I was a child, I grew up in a religious family, and I was taught that being a decent person comes before religion. The first thing is being decent, and if people were just decent people, they would do all the good they need to do.
Sure, yeah, you would do what is right because it is the right thing to do. Kind of the difference between leaders and managers. A manager does things right, kind of like religion, but a leader does the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating stuff. My guest tonight has been Rabbi Yossi Severiansky. His website is revealingthesoul.com. The link is at X Squared Radio. This interview will be uploaded in a couple of hours and will be available at xsquaredradio.com. And because we have had a prior discussion offline, I am going to make the link to tonight's interview available to Rabbi Yossi's listeners. His regular people, and I will send him the link. So if you want, don't want to have to pay for the archive, listen to X Squared Radio archives, you can contact Rabbi Yossi, and he will tell you how to get a hold of this archive, and you can listen to this 3-hour broadcast between he and I at your leisure. Is that acceptable to you?
Yes, it is.
All right. I really appreciate you coming on the program. Thank you so much. Again, 3 hours goes by in about 45 minutes. Your insight and your interpretation has been most valuable and appreciated.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, and good night.
Good night.
Well, there you have it, Earth Explorers, March 14, 2010. Broadcast of X Squared Radio. Many of you are aware that we have had an opportunity to syndicate X Squared Radio. We are moving forward with that. As last week we ran a short survey, many of you emailed me. I appreciate it. It was unanimous. We're going to move forward with it. So 30-minute segments or new 30-minute programs will be created and sent out for approximately 30 weeks. During that 30 weeks, will be considered for syndication, and we will move onward, outward into the world with broadcast radio. And we appreciate you. We would not be here without you. If your subscription to the archives has expired, you might want to take the time to go back in and sign up. It's only $20 a year, less than the cost of a cup of coffee per month. That way, if you miss a program or you're doing something Sunday night, going to the movies, you don't have to worry about it. You can go back into the archives and listen. And please spread the word, tell a friend. More people that sign up with the archives, the easier it is for to take care of our wonderful producer, Dawn, out in Paradise, California. Thank you so much. This is X Squared Radio. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.